This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
Back Row and Chill with Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Boom, we're back after Easter.
Oh, what an Easter it was.
Oh, what an Easter. It's Johanna James and I'm joined today by...
Get it right.
I want to say the wrong word. Ozzy Achille.
There we go. Yes. Third time's the charm.
I pop out stage fright then. Oh no. Ozzy is my co-host for today.
Indeed I am.
He's filling in for Noel Clark.
Mr. Clark.
So welcome.
Thank you.
And right, so we've got a packed show for you today. We've got lots of guests coming on. We've got Lucy Patterson doing film reviews. We've got all the latest in the entertainment gossip. And what's coming out in the cinema? What's good? What's not? What's... You know, what you should be spending your dosh on.
I just watched Power Rangers, and I'm not going to lie to you, I really liked it.
I really liked it too.
I thought it was dope, and I think the reviews of that film are very, very bad, but the film was amazing.
I don't really look at reviews. I'm my own reviewer.
Same. Thanks also, this might, like, I'm going to feed myself to the lions here. I watched Ghost in the Shell as well, even though that was, like, widely boycotted, but that was also pretty fucking dope, man. It was a good film.
Be your own reviewer,
not
I say.
Lie. Yeah.
So no, I was a massive. Actually, I've got a lot of the songs from Power Rangers, the soundtrack, because I've been listening to that all week. It's good. So we're going to be playing. Actually, let's kick off right now with something from Power Rangers. Let's have a look. What have I got?
Who's your favorite Power Ranger?
Oh, the yellow one.
Billy was mine. He was so cool.
Oh, but of course, in the movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He stole the show.
Yeah, he did.
The Blue Power Ranger.
It was the Billy show, totally.
I want like a just spin-off of just him. That would be great. This is one of my favourite songs from the Power Ranger soundtrack. It's called Hand Clap. This is Back Row and Chill. See you in a second.
I can make your hands clap.
Amazing. Love that song.
Love that song.
Gets me up in the morning on the tube.
It did the job. It did.
It did the job. We were just having a quick talk behind stage, off mic. I don't know what you call it. While the song was on, about montage music, because I think that was in a montage in the Power Rangers movie.
Yes, it was, when they were getting their asses handed to them by the putty monsters, or the holograms, actually.
The putty monsters. Oh no, it's the putty monsters. Yeah, I love a movie montage. It's one of my favourite things ever about movies. It's one of my life goals, to be in a movie montage. And Ozzy just said, why don't you make your own? So I think I am.
Boom. There you go.
I'm going to go just make my own.
Make that shit happen.
Movie montage. And I mean, obviously I'm thinking like epic movie montages that come to mind, like Rocky.
Rocky or the Creed film had one just
or
like
I've had
the
a
Rocky.
Very, yeah, which was, you know, like, you know? Rocky 2.
Have there been any in the Marvel films?
There's got to be.
There must have been. Oh, Tony, when he's like trying his suit on for the first time, like in Iron Man 1, I think.
Oh, yeah. There's a really good one in Mrs. Doubtfire.
I don't remember that one.
Oh yeah, when it's like Mrs. Doubtfire learning to be Mrs. Doubtfire. Starts off and he can't like cook, he can't clean, and by the end of it, he's like boogieing with the Hoover and stuff. Yeah, Dude Looks Like a Lady.
Oh
from
yes,
Aerosmith.
That was like an epic montage moment. That was good.
If we're missing any montage moments that should be mentioned, like email in chill@foobarradio or tweet us. @FooBarRadio, and we will give you a shout out. Let us know if there's any like top movie montages or top movies that you think deserve some airspace.
Karate Kid, obviously. What the hell?
Oh my gosh! See,
my gosh.
Like the more you think, yeah. The more you're like, God, that makes the movie. Bloody makes the movie. Right, entertainment news. Thought a little bit. This is the part of the show where we tell you what's going down in the world of entertainment. So let's just intro this right now. It's the entertainment news. Love it. You just like went with it there.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's cool.
Fuck it. Let's just go.
On the ball. Let's do this.
Right. So, top of the entertainment news. Keira Knightley has appeared. She's popped up in the latest trailer for the new Pirates of the Caribbean 5.
Isn't she in all of them? I've never watched the Pirates of the Caribbean before.
Get out.
No, I haven't. No, I'll go now. Sorry. My bad.
Run, rabbit, run. Get out.
I've never watched one. It just never really appealed to me.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I remember I watched, I think I was 12, 13 when the first one came out. I went to the cinema 3 times, which is a lot of pocket money for a 12-year-old.
Yeah, cinema as well, man.
I went 3 times. I was in love with the film. I wanted to be Elizabeth Swan. I wanted to be Jack Sparrow as well. I loved it. And then I didn't read, like, the second and the third, I watched just kind of because it had.
But wait, there's 5 of them?
Mm-hmm.
They must be good films then. Maybe I should give it a gander. Like,
definitely watch the first one.
What would you compare it to?
Oh my god, it's like action. Well, that's the thing. It's a genre. It's a pirate genre. It's not quite being replicated. So
okay.
It's action, adventure, comedy, but there's also
magic.
Yeah. So
has it got some folklore? Because I know that there was like Blackbeard in one of them or something.
Yeah. So they take a bit of history. So you've got like historical characters, like the historical pirates and whatnot. But they mix it in with sort of spooky voodoo stuff. So the Curse of the Black Pearl. The pirates are dead.
Huh.
And, you know, and there's like
David. So zombie pirates.
Pretty much, yeah, zombies.
That sounds dope. Why have I not watched this?
Why have you not?
If you know me and you haven't recommended this film to me, then we are no longer friends, because that sounds fucking dope.
It's so good. But what happened? So this was 10... No, not even that. It was the year 2000 they filmed the original one. It is so old.
Wow, yeah, that's
making me feel old.
It's like kids who were born in year 2000 are almost allowed in clubs now. That's how old that is.
Jesus. Jesus.
That is old.
Please, can someone make a pill to shrink your age? Please, quickly. I'm like... firmly believing that we're going to be of the age where we're going to like
transfer our consciousness into robots
or something. Please, please. But so this was a long time. Pirates of the Caribbean was 2000.
Wow.
And then the last one that Will Turner, and so there's like a love story that goes on between Elizabeth Swan, who is Keira Knightley's character, and Will Turner, who's played by Orlando Bloom, Legolas.
Oh, yes, I know Legolas.
Yeah, so Legolas and Keira Knightley, they get it on. And
let's get it on.
They appear in the first 3 films, and it ends with them having a kid.
Oh, wow.
And so that was 2007.
Is this going to be like a fast forward thing? Or
yeah, so in 2007, the kid was 10.
Yeah.
10-ish, 10, 11. And now it's like 10 years later, and there was all this speculation that Keira Knightley and Orlando Bloom were going to come back. It's confirmed. They're both in the trailer. They're both in the next movie. And then the new young hot lead is their son.
Oh, I get it now. Okay. That's a bingeable weekend of Pirates of the Caribbean.
For sure. Swashbuckling. So I'm so psyched. I can't decide whether I'm more excited for the new Pirates of the Caribbean or the new Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't know.
Guardians all day, mate.
Oh, no,
yes.
No, they're both good.
Guardians is so sick, man. And now, like, the whole team is a lot bigger. Like, the guy with the little whistle stick that kills you with a tune or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
He's part of the Guardians now.
No.
Nebula's part of the Guardians now. It's like a team of just fucking badass motherfuckers. It's so dope.
Well, actually, I've got a bit of Guardian Galaxy gossip here. So apparently, according to the... Because I haven't seen it yet, but people who have early reviewers have said that Baby Groot just steals the show.
Groot's always going to steal
Vin
the
Diesel
show, man.
Just steals the movie, and there is, like, talks and sparks about a Baby Groot spin-off.
Yeah, it's got to be with Rocket, though. It has to be with Rocket.
I hope so.
Groot can't do nothing on his
own.
Yeah,
it's just that.
That's going to be like a Minions film where they just don't really say anything.
I mean,
you know?
I could write the script dialogue for that. there is apparently a gay subplot in the current current film coming up.
With who?
They're speculating about who it's going to be with.
Drax.
It's Nebula.
Nebula?
The sister.
Oh, yeah, totally. Obviously, yeah, it has to be her.
She's got a bit of a gay vibe.
Yeah, because, like, Zoe Saldana's character and Chris Pratt, they're going to get it on.
They're for sure.
They have to.
And, well, the plot of this film apparently is about two sisters. It's about the two sisters and
Yeah, because Thanos is the big bad, and that's their daddy.
And their daddy, but Thanos is not going to be. He's not going to appear in this film.
What?
Because they want to focus it on two sisters, and Thanos was going to steal the limelight, being the big daddy boss guy.
Oh damn!
And James Gunn has just signed on, who's the director, to do Guardians 3. Of course, dope.
The Guardians were like the Deadpool of that year. Like, nobody expected it to be that good.
I just went along like, what is this? This is amazing. But it was weird because I knew two people who were in it.
Well, yeah, because it filmed in London, didn't it?
It filmed in London, and I reckon there was lots of little characters that got given to sort of, you know, semi unfamous actors who I had worked with, both of them, and one girl was from my drama school, so it kind of ruined it a little bit, because I was like,
oh, did she tell you what was happening and stuff?
Max, I work with him. When you know people in the screen, I mean, you must get that a lot, because
It's hard to, like, I don't know, if I see a friend in something, then that's my brethren, no matter how good they are as an actor. It's like, yeah, but we went drinking last week, so I can't really take this too seriously.
Yeah.
Even when I see myself and stuff, it's the same kind of deal. Like,
yeah, because if anyone doesn't know, Ozzy is you're getting out there as an actor.
I'm just trying
everywhere.
To pay my bills, you know.
I mean, let's just give the people a little rundown of your recent CV, because it's very impressive. What have you been doing? What have you been up to?
The last thing that I did was a Lars von Trier film. Lars von Trier is a director who did Nymphomaniac.
Know him.
And it was a film called Jack the Ripper, which was about... No, it's called House of the Jack Bill, which is about Jack the Ripper.
Oh, okay.
And Matt Dillon was playing Jack the Ripper. That's all I can say about that. And then I did Black Mirror, and then there's a film called Sandcastles that's coming out today on Netflix.
So, you know, just casually, like, in all of that shit. yeah, you know, I just, like, worked here and, like, you know. I bet you... who is the most sort of high-profile person that you've got in your phone contact?
Oh, goddamn.
Like, have you got, like...
I got Spider-Man in my phone book.
What, the current
Spider-Man? Yeah, I did a film with him years ago. We're still friends. That's cool.
Oh my god,
Spider-Man. I got Matt Dillon in there from, Jesse Pinkman.
No,
from Breaking Bad and Friday Night Lights. He was in Black Mirror with me. That was a lot of. Oh, and Michaela Cole.
That's mental.
Yeah,
they're
probably the highest, I think. Everybody else just didn't want to give me that number because like, I'm a really weird dude, so it's understandable.
Probably shouldn't open with that when you meet someone. Like,
hi, can I have your number, please? Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
I feel like, who's this dude? Wow, that's cool. I mean, I don't have any. Who have I got in my... Noel, that doesn't really... He doesn't seem famous to me.
Noel Clark, yeah.
He's just my mate, so I've got Noel.
Snap.
I have Natasha Bedingfield.
Oh, cool.
Friends with her. Recently did a sketch of her, which is quite fun.
Oh, cool.
She kind of reached out to me and said, I want to do a sketch. Yeah. I know, I don't know any other famous people. Oh my god, I bet there's probably some famous people that are on my phone, but like, dude, me. But sorry. Right, oh yes, back to entertainment news.
Yes,
that's where we were.
What's going on in La La Land?
Right, yeah, he says, so Keira Knightley's in Pirates of the Caribbean. Disney is going on this huge, I was going to say bender, I don't think it's a bender. it's remaking its entire library of Disney films
Everything
into live action.
Everything that you grew up on over the next 10 years is going to be live action, 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 action.
That's good.
Starting with Aladdin. I can show you the world in 3D.
It's true.
God.
And I heard a rumor, and I can't fully confirm this, but I heard from like a source from somewhere in, you know, behind the lines, that the reason why, apart from just like making billions and billions of dollars, the reasons why Disney are, they have to remake everything if they want to keep
the copyrights
to it, because they only originally bought the copyrights for something like 50 years.
Yeah.
So if they want to keep the song copyrights, which is worth so much money, it's all the Disney, it's the Disney
and their merchandise
empire.
As well.
Exactly.
Yeah, they have to.
So they got to remake everything. So they are making everything from Lion King. Well, they've already done Beauty and the Beast, huge success.
Lion King, Donald Glover's playing Simba. That's
for
pretty
sure.
dope. Yeah.
And they are doing Aladdin, and they're casting it at the moment. And talks are that Will Smith is going to play the genie.
How do we feel about that? Tweeting a Fubar Radio.
Yeah, how do you feel about that? I mean, obviously, Robin Williams was and is and always will be the genie.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think he should.
Apparently, so much of the original genie from Robin Williams was all just ad lib. He just came in and he just went off.
You see, what I think, we have the technology to just take all of the original genie stuff and just mess around with what he's saying to make it say other stuff, so we could still have Robin Williams doing it.
Robbie Williams, that'd be a different
that'd
genie.
Be an interesting genie. Yeah.
Hey kids, how's it going? Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I love Will Smith, but come on, man, that's like an iconic character. Just let
I
it,
don't know.
Let it
what
live.
Are we thinking? Let us know. Tweet us in at Fubar Radio. Do you think Will Smith, is it a yes or a no? Is it yay or nay? Maybe we'll do a poll. if we think yeah, and if you can think of anybody else who'd be a better genie, you know, I'll take a whack at it. maybe a girl genie. Why not?
Yeah,
mix it up?
Why not? Yeah.
Why not? Why does it have to be, you know, I'm sure like Dawn French or someone would be a funny genie. Right. I forgot, but we have lots of competitions to do and give away and all of that whatnot. So let's see who won from a couple of weeks ago. So we've got two competitions to give away. So the first one we're going to do now, and the winner is... No, there's no winner. Oh, okay.
Anticlimactic.
Oh, no, I'm just reading... Oh, no. Okay, great. Let's start again. We have two competitions to give away today. So the first one, you can win a prize bundle for the DVD release of Sully, Miracle on the Hudson.
Damn.
Tom Hanks. So it includes a DVD, a Sully hoodie, a duffel bag, a Sully cap, T-shirt, and Captain Sully's autobiography, and a world clock.
That's dope. Everybody needs a clock.
Who doesn't want a clock?
Do you know what I mean?
So the DVD is available now and on Blu-ray. Tom Hanks plays Captain Sully.
I haven't seen that film
It's
either.
The emergency plane landing on the River Hudson.
Didn't that get nominated for stuff? Yeah.
Lots and lots of like
prize. Really,
so to win, all you have to do is follow us at Fubar Radio on the Twitter and just retweet the image that we're about to put out now, and we will announce the winner next Friday. Also, we've got another competition coming up later in the show, so stay tuned. I've got some songs to show you today.
Okay,
I've got like a wide selection of songs. But I've also been looking into TV themes and things like that. But then I've been looking into remixes.
Remixes of original TV show themes.
I know, right? How like weird and left wing
can
we go?
Okay.
I found one from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, that's a classic.
And I'm actually loving it. So I'm going to play it now. And we're going to start getting, because it's nearly the weekend. I'm going to like officially call the weekend
starting
now. It
is the weekend. Thursday's a new Friday. Let's do this, mate.
So this is possibly the only song that I can rap along to as a young white girl. We're going to play it now. It's Background and Chill.
This is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down. And I'd like to take a minute and just sit right there. I'll tell you how I became the prince of a town called Bel-Air. A town called Bel-Air. A town called Bel-Air. A town called Bel-Air. Said, you're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel-Air. I begged and pleaded with her day after day, but she packed my suitcase and sent me on my way. She gave me a kiss and then she gave me my ticket. I put my Walkman on and said, I might as well kick it. First class, yo, this is bad. Drinking orange juice out of a champagne glass. This is what the people of Bel-Air living like. This might be alright.
top a champagne glass, bring it on, juice out of a champagne glass, bring it on, juice out of a champagne glass, bring it on, juice out of a champagne glass, a champagne glass, a champagne glass, a champagne glass, bring it on, juice out of a champagne glass, a champagne glass, a champagne glass, a champagne glass.
Approve. Great. That was dope.
Did you like that song?
Yeah,
I know,
that
right?
That was cool, man.
That was a cool little. I'm gonna. If you like that, let us know. I might do some more like popular TV show remixes. Right, we've got our first guest in the studio. We've got Sabina and Ziva. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, welcome, welcome, Fubar Radio. You've come in to talk to us about your new film, Letters from Baghdad.
That's correct.
So, if you'd like to let our listeners know sort of what it's about and a little bit of the backstory and the synopsis. Don't be shy. Don't be shy. Jump on that mic.
It's about Gertrude Bell. She's sometimes called the female Lawrence of Arabia. She was the most powerful woman in the British Empire during and after World War I. And she helped establish Iraq.
Oh, wow.
And the Iraq Museum.
Wow.
So she was really
amazing. She's pretty badass then.
Yeah. Totally. That is exactly the word we used to describe
Is this quite
her.
Like an action-packed kind of film? Or?
Well,
there is action in it, yes. At one point she traveled on her own, actually the first woman to do a solo expedition to sort of the center of what is today Saudi Arabia. It's a city called Hail. And she was attacked and
she handled some business.
Yes, and she even was thrown in prison and solitary confinement for 10 days. And so yes, she had some very action-packed journeys.
She was a risk-taker. She loved adventure and anything really exciting.
Breaking all the norms before breaking the norms is a thing.
I love the, it's an untold true story. But I Googled her a little bit after looking at this. And it's weird how, it's a shame how so much of her is sort of written out of history. So what you guys are doing is you're trying to put her back into the history books and being like, no, look at this. Which film is such a fantastic way to get people to know about stories and history.
Exactly. It was so incredible to us because when we were reading about her, she's so much more important and influential than Lawrence of Arabia. And it's really amazing that he's like a household word and people don't know who she is.
Yeah. When we did our research, we went often on the train, traveled in the train in the UK. I mean, we thought in the US, where we're from, New York, we thought it's okay if people don't know her, she's a British, a British character. But when we were traveling through the UK, going up to the archives and doing our research, we often would ask people on the train, in the restaurant, anybody we could meet and ask them, do you know who Gertrude Bell is? And nobody knew. She's really, really, really under-recognized. So we hope that this will change as of tonight.
So making the movie, how did the film sort of come together? Did you guys, where did the story come from? And
well, we worked together on another film about an incredible woman named Ruth Gruber. That film was ahead of time, and I produced it, and Sabina edited it. And Sabina asked Ruth if she knew Gertrude Bell to Ruth. Ruth said no, but I had just read Gertrude Bell's biography, and we started thinking right then, in 2009, about the idea of moving forward with a documentary.
Amazing. And how long did it take to sort of to actually film? And
well, our film has 75% archival footage, so the majority of what is in there took time to research and find. So we didn't film that, but that was actually a very, very important part of the project, because all these this footage is from the turn of the century. We weren't sure would we were going to find anything. Mm. And so we asked the archives to go into their vaults and sometimes based just on keywords, like, you know, we're looking for footage from Jordan or Syria. This is all the places that Gertrude Bell traveled to. And said, you know, please can you look in your vaults? And then if they did find it, we had them redigitize them and at high resolution. So when you see the film on the big screen, it looks so crisp, like as if we had shot it. In fact, often people come up to us and said, how were you able to get this footage and shoot this with all these like interesting boats and these, you know, street scenes? And we said, this is original footage from 1900.
Wow.
So what was the time frame? It was after World War One, which was around what, 1918?
1918. She was in, she started in 1915 in Cairo in the Arab Bureau. And then she moved to Iraq in 1917 to work in, as Oriental Secretary in the Colonial Office. And then she stayed there until her death in 1926.
Oh, she died really early.
She did.
Shortly before her 58th birthday.
Wow. Oh, wow. So where can people see, if they're listening to this and they're like, right, I'm intrigued, I want to know all about Gertrude, how would they find and be able to see Letters from Baghdad?
Well, starting tonight, it's going to open at Picture House Central.
Perfect.
and Dock House Curzon Bloomsbury. And they can go on the website of our wonderful distributor, Verve Pictures, and their website is vivaverve.com. And we are actually booked into 40 cities around the UK.
That's dope.
Amazing. And then eventually, is it going to be able to, you'll be able to buy it? And
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. There'll be streaming DVDs. And on June 2nd, we're opening in the States in New York.
Oh, amazing. But you're going to open here first. So
yes.
We can.
Yes.
Yes.
Feel very honored. Thank
Premier.
You. Thank you.
Oh, this is so exciting. And so it's more, it's a documentary. Do you have any sort of... what's that word when you do like a visualization of what happened? Do you have anyone playing
reimagining?
Reimagining?
Ooh. of footage that you couldn't get a hold of?
What we did, which is quite unique, is we used all primary source material. So the script was built from the primary source material, the verbatim taking letters, documents, memoirs of people that interacted with Gertrude Bell, and mostly her own letters. And then we shot interviews with actors that are performing the letters.
As if like monologues.
As if they were being interviewed. So film is actually kind of like a documentary that could have been shot 3 years after Gertrude Bell's death.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay.
But one thing that we're really excited about is that Tilda Swinton reads the letters of Gertrude Bell.
Oh, that's dope.
So she's really cool.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Oh, amazing. Oh, we've just had a tweet in from Lucy from Sheffield who says, will this be in any film festivals?
It was. We did our premiere at the London BFI Festival in last fall. And... it is now mainly in theaters in the UK.
Okay, it's moved on from the festival. Okay, so it wasn't a festival, Lucy. Missed the boat. never mind, this is amazing. And so you guys, you've worked together before on the previous film.
Yes, but this is our first time we've directed.
Okay. And have you got any other, what are you looking forward next to?
Well, a lot of ideas are percolating. We're definitely fascinated with women that are underrepresented in history.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be another story like that. And right now,
we're
totally dedicated to getting this film out.
Yeah, okay.
It's a labor of love.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this is really exciting. I like that. And especially as... this whole area in the world right now is in the news a lot, but for very different reasons. Yeah. Like Syria,
there's not a lot of positive stuff coming out of there.
And it seems quite alien that a young British woman would be like, oh, I'm going to go move to Iraq. it wouldn't be something that a lot of young British women would do now, because it's such a zone of conflict.
Well, that's the thing. One of the things that was so exciting for us when we looked at all the footage, and when you see the film, you see this world that you can't possibly imagine. The Middle East from 100 years ago. If you're looking at Baghdad and Damascus and Tehran and Cairo, really, really opens your eyes, I think.
Mm. And there are also quite a few parallels in the film to today and to the 2003 invasion or occupation of Iraq by the US and the Brits. So it is politically a very interesting film to see as well, because it explains or at least enlightens viewers about why certain things happened today.
Because I remember seeing some photos of the 60s and the 70s of Iraq, and then they put obviously the same location and they showed it today. And it is like, wow, before it was beautiful.
Really?
The streets were beautiful. And there was colour. And
that's so weird to think of, because all I can really imagine is what the news shows me from when I was a kid. Like,
no, this was a beautiful street. It had palm trees, coloured cars. It was like shops. It looked like really cosmopolitan.
That's dope. Like a Cuba kind of thing?
Yeah, it was kind of what I think we would probably imagine like an Egypt or a Cairo.
Oh, okay.
Because Brits for some reason seem to think Egypt's, they're like safe. They're like, oh, I'll go on holiday to Egypt, that's fine. But you wouldn't be like, oh, I'm going to go Syria.
Yeah.
But
the one other thing that's really interesting about Gertrude Bell is that she was a fantastic photographer, and she left 7,000 photographs.
Oh, wow.
And some of them are all of ancient sites that ISIS has now blown to pieces.
Wow.
So that's sort of interesting.
Has she got like a collection of all the photographs?
Yes, her archive is at Newcastle University.
Okay.
You could do like a Gertrude Bell Instagram with 7,000 posts there.
Yeah.
A lot of followers,
that's
I think.
A lot of followers.
Yes, you got it.
Start the Instagram. Everything's on the gram now. Amazing. Oh, we've just had a little question come in, which I think would be good to put to the table. It's not directly related, but we're talking about female directors, because obviously you guys are female. Anne Hathaway has recently been quoted saying she got skeptical about being cast in a film when there was a female director, and she was saying that she felt bad.
What the hell?
Yeah, she said that she felt she realised that it was like a subconscious skepticalness coming through.
Like a programmed thing.
Yeah, she said that she was almost like
interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, like in her subconscious, she would automatically think,
it's not
this
gonna
may
work,
be
or
yeah.
difficult, or the film may never get released, because who goes to see films by women directors?
That's incredible.
It's very interesting. I mean, we are obviously, you know, it's us and we are showing a film that is about a very important, very interesting woman.
Mm.
So there is almost like a sort of a double whammy. Two female directors with a film about a woman that is, can be a role model to so many other women. But I think that it's true. There is still less women directors. We spoke with Mia Bays, who actually has an interesting series called Bird's Eye View, and it's all about female directors and female-driven films. And it seems that there is a lot of women initially, but when it comes down to the larger, the higher positions, it all of a sudden drops off
the percentage.
Yeah.
But the thing is that's so ironic is that a really high percentage of the box office of people who go to movies are women. So that is what is, you know, so annoying.
Yeah. That's a nice, that's an
Do you think it's going to be changing any quicker? Because I know like maybe like 10, 20 years ago it would have been a very different scene to what it is now, because although there aren't a lot, there are still more than there was before. So it is changing. But what do you think needs to be done to really change it?
I think that one thing that has to happen is that women get more access to the funding, because funding makes the world go round.
Yeah, and that's every project. Yeah,
exactly. And if the funders are more hesitant to back female directors, less female directors are going to get their films made. So we sort of have to start in the minds of the people who have the money.
With the funding.
So like even above the producers and stuff, we need the... Okay.
That's the financial backers to have a bit of faith.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also maybe it's by sort of... constantly saying female directors, we should just be talking about we're directors.
They're directors,
they're producers, they're equal to the men. Why even single them out?
I think that's a really good point. Like, just stop the segregation altogether.
Yeah,
you are what you are. It doesn't matter, gender, race, anything.
I remember, actually, I did a bit of research last week, and it was, because I didn't realize it was this low, but 30% of Hollywood speaking roles were female. 70% of the speaking roles last year were recorded as male, and 30%. And I was like, "Well, we don't say a lot, do we?" which is weird because I talk more than anyone. So, hence the radio show. But that was like crazy. And 2% were lesbian and gay, teeny tiny. And 12.9% leading roles were from an ethnic minority. So it's kind of, you know, if you're basically a lesbian black lady, you're not saying a lot in Hollywood movies, which is like, well, we should really need to like do something about that. It's crazy, which is mental, because they say that, but then, you know, the female Thor comics outsold the Thor comics.
And Iron Man's a girl now as well in the comics. She's a black girl called Riri in the comics. Mm. So when Robert Downey Jr. goes, maybe he's going to get taken over by a black girl. Who knows?
Maybe. I think they need to catch up, because in comic book sales, and in comic book it's not uncommon. So Deadpool was originally bisexual, and he was
asexual or something like that. Just really ambiguous sexuality.
Yeah, but basically. And then they like made sure he was straight for the film. I think Hollywood kind of like,
oh, that's interesting,
they shave it all down. Yeah. But in the comic book world, obviously the fans are loving it, and they accept way more women, way more everything.
One thing that is interesting, actually, in the documentary world, there are a lot of women. Mm-hmm. A lot of women directors are coming up in the documentary world.
That's good.
So it's different. I guess Hollywood is sort of its own animal.
Yeah, Hollywood
is
a bit late to the game, isn't it? It really is a bit late. But there's starting to move. Like, the whole Moonlight winning the Best Picture, which is fantastic, but it's almost like... we shouldn't really be like be going, oh, this is amazing. We should just be like, oh, amazing, one Best Picture, cool, next. It shouldn't be like a heart, you know, but interesting that Anne Hathaway's spoken up about that, about saying she's being honest and saying, if I knew it was a script coming from a woman, I was automatically looking for the faults, and if it was a man, I was automatically relaxed.
Wow.
Well, it was good that she was honest about that.
Yeah, so she's saying, this is not right. Why do I feel like this? I need to like... Yeah,
good.
So this is interesting. So keep going. This is amazing. And anyone who's just tuning in, we're talking about Letters from Baghdad, which is a new film about Gertrude Bell, who was a kick-ass lady of the 19th century?
20th century.
The Wonder Woman of the 20th century.
Yeah, she was brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Amazing.
It was great.
Chat, thank you. And just to catch up, you can check out Letters from Baghdad from tonight. Was that right?
Yes.
Picture House, Curzon.
And Doc Curzon. And VivaVerve.com has all of the listings.
VivaVerve.
Nice.
VivaVerve.
Sounds better in an American accent.
Rolls off the tongue. VivaVerve.
VivaVerve. Amazing. Right, we're going to go back to some Power Rangers soundtrack, I think, because I'm loving that movie at the moment. So this is Ring of Fire from the Power Rangers. This is Bat, Row & Chill.
Fire it. poppin', it's Kent Jones. And usually I like to be in the front, but right now this is Back Row and Chill.
That's like the coolest.
That was so cool.
I've got from Kent Jones. Thank you so much, babe. Amazing. Oh, earlier in the show, we asked you guys, we were talking about movie montages and what were your favourite ones, or if you had any epic movie montages that we didn't shout out. So Jordan Parsons on Twitter said, hashtag movie montage, best ones have to be from Footloose and Team America. You mentioned...
That said the Team America one.
Yes.
Well, the soundtrack to the montage is him explaining what is happening in the montage. It's
brilliant.
So fucking funny.
From Lou says, Footloose is the best montage of all time. Kevin Bacon was so hot.
Never seen Footloose.
Oh my God. Oh my God. No, it's good. It's really good.
I don't like musicals.
But you know what? This is good. This is like 80. Kevin Bacon is this kid.
Oh, I like Kevin Bacon. Hollow Man was a great film, yeah.
Outback American town where dancing is banned. It's like a very religious town.
I'm joking. To all my dancer mates, I'm joking.
And so basically the town council say that the dancing it means promiscuousness. Oh. I was like, little did they know that the twerk was yet to be invented. This is just 80s dancing. So they banned all the kids. So the kids used to go out and like dance on the...
Have these secret little dance rooms.
Secret dance, which is, you know, if you basically, does no parent ever learn, if you want to stop something, do not ban it.
Yeah.
Because it makes them just do
Tell
it
Tell them
anyway.
To do it and then they won't do it.
Exactly. Reverse psychology kids here.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Anyway, yeah, so it's a good dance movie, to be fair. Oh, someone says, Jack and Clapham says, Bueller. I've seen Ferris Bueller so many times. I love the montage in that. That's a good montage. That's a very different
montage. What was the montage in that again?
It's very different. It's not an upbeat montage. It's like this weird arty montage in the middle where they go out on their day trip and they go to this the Metropolitan Art Museum.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just about them bunking off school, like
the
montage.
Yeah, and there's like this weird kind of art montage where they follow these kids around and that's good.
That was pretty good, yeah.
That's good. There's loads of things coming in. So from Cindy says, Dirty Dancing, that is such a sexy Swayze montage. That's hard to say. Say sexy Swayze.
Sexy Swayze.
The chemistry between Johnny and Baby is so good. Of course.
Again, never seen it. No.
Oh my goodness.
Sorry, no.
Dirty Dancing. I saw it when I was way too young to appreciate it. I was like, oh, that's pretty boring.
Oh,
and then when I sort of had grown and I had a bit of a, I don't know what that is.
Maturity.
I matured. I had a sexual enlightenment and I understood the film. It is absolutely amazing.
I'll check it out one day.
Again, it's like kind of like a similar theme in the 60s in this like hot, really like, you know, family holiday camp. There is an underground. The kids
dancing.
At night, they sneak off.
I love that in that era of time, dancing was what was forbidden. Like these days, we got what? Crack cocaine and like...
Heroin!
<It's> like, dancing. Oh, he's dancing. No, stay away from him, Charlie.
I know. I mean, the darkest thing, I guess, it would be like a... heroin terrorist camp or something that kids would be doing now. People would be like, no!
Oh, my God.
But yeah, so they go and then this girl who doesn't really know anything and she ends up having to learn to dance and dance with one of the top guys in this like dance competition. It's really
cool.
Good. They fall in love.
Like Save the Last Dance or Stomp the Yard.
Yeah. So basically they got all of those ideas.
Came from those original
from
films.
Dirty
Dancing. Yeah.
Really good. And the chemistry between them is just like, whoa. Okay, so we've been running a poll on our Twitter at Fubar Radio, which is, do you think hashtag Will Smith will make a good genie in the 2017 Aladdin? And at the moment...
What are the people saying? Come on.
They're saying 27% say yes, 7% say no, 33% says why not a woman, and 33% says Robin Williams forever. So... it's majority positive, I would say.
Really?
It's kind of, sort of.
Okay. I mean, Will Smith can really do no wrong apart from Suicide Squad and that film he did with Margot Robbie and those other couple films he did didn't really do too well. But he's really good, though.
I still like that.
I like him. Know, I do I really like him, though,
I
to
like
be fair.
I like Will Smith. Why not? Why not a woman? Or why not Will Smith in drag?
I'd rather a woman, to be honest with you, I'm not gonna lie to you, than Will Smith in drag. I would really like to see a female genie. I think that would be actually groundbreaking.
Yeah, a female genie. That would just be brilliant.
We can. There's a who's that Australian lady that was in that Bridesmaid?
My gosh,
Ruth Wilson, is that her name?
No. She's my goodness. Her name is the.
What was her name?
She's in Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
as well.
No. Well, she's also someone that could do it. But I'm talking about the Australian one. Can't remember her name, and she was in like the Bridesmaids. Yeah, she was in Bridesmaids, of course. Yeah.
Rebel Wilson?
Yes, Rebel Wilson would be a hilarious genie.
She's not a bride, but she's in Pitch Perfect.
Yes, that's it.
The one. Yeah, Rebel Williams would be an amazing.
That
Rebel
would be
Wilson,
pretty funny, I think.
She would be brilliant as genie. Okay, like, let's start a hashtag. Let's just get like the Disney producers to notice us.
Yes, who should be genie? What female actress should be genie?
Yeah, I'm putting my money on either Melissa McCarthy. That's the one.
Yes, that's the other
or
one.
Or Rebel Wilson. Or me, you know, throw myself in there, always looking for jobs. Hashtag unemployed actor. Okay.
Fun employed. We're called fun employed.
I'm just seeing here on my notes that Disney, they're making a Dumbo as well.
Yeah, live action Dumbo, which is a very trippy film. You look back at it now. That like whole montage with the crows and stuff. That's way too trippy for children to be watching.
It's a bit fucked up, I know. And well, it's going to be even more messed up because guess what director they've got?
Oh, I heard about this. It's the same guy from Corpse Bride or something, right?
Tim Burton.
That's going to be so crazy.
Oh, I know.
Oh my gosh.
And it's going to have Danny DeVito, Evergreen, and they were talking about Will Smith being in that. I think he was going to be one of the crows, but they're going to.
They can't do that again. That was a bit, you know, racially back then as well. Anyway,
I know you watch it now and you're like,
"Whoa,
geez.
Our parents let us watch this shit, man. Damn,
mommy." Well, did you know, factoid, that even as late as Aladdin was done in like the early 90s? That's like 25 years old. They had to reanimate the beginning of Aladdin when they transferred it onto DVD. Because it was racist.
Really?
Yeah, and I noticed this myself because I used to have the DVD of Aladdin and I learned, obviously, all the songs by heart.
What did they change?
So in the beginning of the song with Arabian Nights, there's a bit where, and I swear it said this, and it said, it's like Arabian Nights, and it says, where they cut off your ear if they don't like your face. It's barbaric, but hey, it's home.
Wow.
And they said, well, we can't really talk about Middle East like that, so we're going to change it. So when they did the DVD, they reanimated it and they re-recorded it and they changed it where it's so hot in here that you can't feel your face.
Wow, I can't believe they did that.
And I was like, because I'm watching the DVD and I went, that's not the right words. And then I Googled it and somebody's put the original VHS thing on YouTube so you can watch the original opening and you can hear them say, well, they cut off your ear if they don't like your face.
Just getting away with everything those days.
It's barbaric,
man.
But hey, terrible. It's home. Someone said, should Zach Galifianakis be the genie?
That would be hilarious. That would be funny. It'd be a very different genie, but that'd be quite funny.
Genie with a man bag.
You know what I mean? Very awkward man bag toting genie. Yes,
that would be. You know what? I wouldn't mind him either. I wouldn't mind him.
He's good though. He's good. He's got a very particular style of comedy that can't be recreated. Much like Robin Williams.
Yeah.
So
he would have his own take on it. What we don't want is we don't want somebody trying to be Robin Williams.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That would just fall. He would be so far removed from what Robin Williams did that it could actually be very dope.
Someone also said, talking about Suicide Squad, Cara Delevingne was so shit, she should never be allowed to act again from Sally.
Hey, come on now, Sally. Let me talk to you about Cara, okay?
Or do you know her?
I don't know her.
Okay. No.
But I saw her in a film called Paper Towns, and she was surprisingly amazing in that film. Mm. And I think that if we judge an actor's acting on just one film, then I'd be very much unemployed, because I've done a lot of shit.
I know, me too.
People have bad days, and we can't blame the actors. We can blame the writing, or the directors, or the studio.
The editor. It's down to the editing, the music they put behind you.
Yeah, exactly. The takes they decide to use, because each scene is shot, 40, 30, 20, times or whatever, whichever take they decide to use.
It's down to the editing. Yeah. It's like the editing gods can make you look amazing or
I don't think it was just Cara. I think the film as a whole was pretty bad.
Yeah. if the film is amazing and she was the loose link.
Yeah, then yeah.
She wasn't the loose link in
exactly.
that movie.
The whole film was bad.
Let's not worry about that. We've got some cool films coming up that I wanted to tell you guys about, because at the moment coming out of the cinema, it's a little bit of a dry season. Right.
Is
now,
it?
There's not a lot of
stuff coming out
like this week.
Oh, this
that
week.
I want to go see. Like looking at the cinema
fair.
Stuff that's coming out this week.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit like.
I thought you meant this summer. There's some stuff.
No, no,
I can't
no. This
wait
year
see.
And this summer, yeah. Amazing. But just like I'm talking about this week, no. So what's coming up that's going to be made? There is a film. Do you like wrestling at all? WWE.
I used to love wrestling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so they are making a movie about. Paige, who's one of the main female champions.
That film's going to do really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's a comedy, and it's written and directed by Stephen Merchant. from the Ricky Gervais show.
Yeah.
And he was recently had a role in Logan.
Yes, he did.
So he's writing, written and directed it.
Wait, is this a real WWE star? So is it like a true story?
Yeah, it's just a true story. Oh, wow. Me and Noel are big WWE fans. We try and go every year.
I saw all of Noel's tweets during WrestleMania. Yeah. So
me and Noel, we've been going for about 5 years. We've been going to wrestling together with like a group of us.
Yeah.
And we know Paige. Paige is a fan of the films and stuff. So we go backstage and we see her. So it's cool. Really quite weird. So she's not playing herself. They've got an actress called Florence Pugh who's going to be playing Paige.
Is she unknown? Has she done anything before?
She is up and coming. Ah. And I recently saw a film, Lady Macbeth.
Which have not seen that. Oh wait, I've seen posters about that. Yeah, apparently she's like a groundbreaking.
She is groundbreaking. Yeah. Groundbreaking new actress.
Yeah, something like that. That's what they said.
So she has now. They finished filming it. I didn't interview her last week, but we're going to play the interview next week's show because we can't talk about it because of an embargo. But so she's going to play Paige, and it's the true story because it's quite interesting. She's one of like five brothers, the wrestling father, wrestling brothers.
Yeah.
She started wrestling from a tiny tot, and then she got into really young when she was like 16. She got into professional wrestling,
yeah.
And she even now she's only like 21 or something, and she went on to be like the women's WWE women's champion, and really sort of pioneered. She was like the anti-diva. So a lot of the traditionally, a lot of the WWE divas, they're very blonde and tanned and sexual.
Yeah.
And they look slightly like glorified strippers that are wrestling.
Yeah.
Whereas Paige went in and she's pale. She's got black hair. She's British. She went in to fight properly.
Yeah,
like
I'll come here to fuck some people up.
Exactly.
Right.
So she kind of changed and revolutionized the sort of women's section.
Oh, cool.
And they now don't call them divas. They call them women wrestlers. And I've noticed just going to the wrestling that before the women's matches used to be sort of quiet time, so people would go get a Coke.
Really?
They wouldn't be so vocal.
Yeah.
Now when it's the women's matches, when Paige comes on and all her mates,
everyone's in there.
No difference. There's like not a lot of difference now between the men and the women's fights, which is amazing. So Dwayne The Rock Johnson is executive producing it because obviously
he has his shit. Yeah.
He's also in it. Florence Pugh is Paige.
As himself, as The Rock.
Yeah.
Dope. Obviously. Who else would he play? I'm sorry.
No,
who's The Rock going to play in a wrestling movie?
He's going to play
Stone Cold Steve Austin, obviously. Come on, guy.
Nick Frost is going to play her dad.
Oh, cool.
Vince Vaughn's going to play her coach.
Oh, so I like a bit of Vince Vaughn.
Lena Headey from Game of Thrones is going to play her mum.
Who's Lena Headey?
Oh, she is the bitch queen who got her hair chopped off in Game of Thrones.
Oh,
not the Red Witch. The queen twin who fucks her brother.
Head chopped off. What?
She got her hair chopped off.
Oh, her hair. I thought you said head. I'm like, I'm up to date. What did I miss?
I missed that episode. Was that an Easter egg? So I'm really excited. The film's going to be called Fighting With My Family.
That sounds like a good... I'd watch that. I think that's going to do really well as well.
I'm really excited. Yeah, it's going to bring American and British audiences, I think, together.
And also the wrestling whole entertainment business is fucking huge.
It's booming.
It's huge.
People think it died after it changed like a couple of years ago. Like, oh, it changed from WWF to WWE.
I was still watching it at that time anyway. It was hard to get my head around it at the time. I was a kid and I was like, what do you mean it's WWE? No, that doesn't make any sense to me. But stayed strong for a little while.
That's brilliant. So any WWE fans, what do you think about that? Let us know. Do you want to watch this movie? What do you want to do? Me and Noel are going to try and get down and use our contacts, see if we can like get down to set and get some...
Oh, that'd be dope.
Get some gossip and get some interviews and stuff. I have met The Rock.
Yeah,
I met him before.
What's he like?
He is lovely, and I expected him to be like massive.
Is he not that big?
He's not that actually huge. Like I'm.
How big is he?
Well, I'd say maybe like 6'1".
6'1". Okay.
Which isn't like I'm 5'9".
I'm 5'10".
I'm 5'9"-ish, and when I wear heels, I'm 6 foot. So you know, me in some boots, be like, I could take on The Rock.
I felt the same way when I met. The Sandcastle film's got Henry Cavill in it. So when I met him, I was like, dude, I'm looking at you eye to eye. I'm toe to toe with Superman right now. I feel like a big dude.
It's like, wow, well, yeah, I measure up. Hey Marvel. So I met him. He was really nice. I interviewed him last year for like the Central Intelligence movie, and I was quite nervous because it was Kevin Hart as well.
Yeah.
And it was me and Kevin Hart and The Rock and a little like Oreo sandwich thing going on. It was great. I tried to high five the Kevin Hart and he left me hanging.
Oh, that's deep, man.
And that is on camera and on the internet.
Did he do it for a joke, or did he just purposely
I think he genuinely left me hanging. I was like, yeah bro, up here, and he just like, no, I'm not gonna do that. I was like, oh
wow.
Sorry.
Kevin, thanks, cool, Kev. Dude.
Thanks, Kev. But afterwards, The Rock, he like he was like, well done, Missy. He took me aside, gave me a hug, and he grabbed my arm and he was like, oh, I love your tattoos. And we were like comparing tattoos.
Oh, that's
I was like,
cool.
Mate, I love yours. Oh, at least I think I said that, but it probably came out like, I got my tattoo. I think I did. I fangirled a little bit over the rock.
We all fangirl sometimes, don't
you
we?
Know, it happens. Right, I'm going to go. We've been talking a lot of Disney, so I'm going to bring in my one Disney song of the week. This actually won an Oscar musically.
It did. I do remember
this.
Back in the
day. Yes. This is Can You Feel the Love Tonight from Elton John. So this is Background Chill. If you're chilling with someone right now and you want to get it on, let's do it to Elton John. There
let's
we go.
Get on.
Sharp day when the heat of a rolling wind can't be turned away. An enchanted moment, and it sees me through. It's enough for this restless warrior just to be with you. And can you feel it is where we are. It's enough for this wide-eyed wanderer that we got this far. And can you feel the love tonight? How it's led to rest. It's enough all in turn. There's a rhyme and reason to the wild outdoors. When the heart of the star-crossed Voyager beats in time with yours. And can you feel the love tonight? It is where make kings and vagabonds believe the fairy bells.
Nice. Oh, that was a great harmony.
I sung that.
That was dope.
Yeah, that was me. So that was from The Lion King, yes. One of my fave Disneys.
Classic.
For any haters out there on the music.
Looking forward to the remake, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, no. Have you seen the live?
No, I haven't seen. Oh. I don't like musicals, but I don't mind the Disney originals, though. It's weird.
I'm such a skeptic.
Yeah, exactly. Ingrained.
No, the live Lion King is good. Went to see it last year. I had a friend who worked in it as well. She used to tell me all the backstage goth of what you're tinkling around your cup there.
I'm fidgeting.
Tinky, tinky.
Adam Marie,
Tinker Taylor, soldier spy. Right, we've got our next guest on the line. She's currently in America. It's former celeb journalist Alison Kugel, who apparently here has more skeletons than the Crypt Keeper when it comes to celebrity and political dirty laundry.
That is high praise.
I know. And she's been writing her book. We did speak to her a couple of months back, actually, on the show while she was writing the book. And now, I believe she's finished, so she's going to have a quick chat with us to let us know what's going on with that book, and hopefully she's going to tell us some like dirty secrets.
Yes,
that's
some
what
exclusive, FUBAR exclusive gossip.
Let's see if she's on the line. Alison, are you there?
I am here.
Hello.
Hey, how are you? Woo! Where are you, Alison, right now?
I am actually in sunny Florida for the next several weeks.
Nice.
I'm so jealous.
Very nice.
Oh, well, welcome back on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So before we came on, we talked a little bit about your book, which you were in the process of writing, and now you've finished. Is that right?
The book is actually coming out on Tuesday, April 25th.
So close.
Nice.
So close.
Yeah.
And just to tell our listeners a little bit about what the book's about, do you want to just sort of pitch it out there? Because you're going to explain it a lot better than I can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I spent 10 years as a celebrity journalist. I interviewed a little more than 200, well-known figures, actors, models, musicians, sports figures, health gurus, politicians, you name it. But at the same time, I was actually going through some pretty rough times personally because I was suffering from some pretty severe anxiety and panic attack problems.
Okay.
So I wanted to actually write the book as a convergence of the two. So the book is quite personal because it weaves back and forth between my experiences with a lot of famous people and also a lot of the mental health and emotional health problems that I was going through, because I figured that, you know, the celebrity stuff is great and it's fun and it would really pull people in and probably people who wouldn't ordinarily pick up a self-help book. Mm. But at the same time, I wanted to deliver an important message because there are so many people who suffer with different types of anxiety disorders that I really felt that my story could help.
No, that's amazing.
That's really amazing, because that's something that a lot of people don't really talk, you don't hear about it a lot as well in mainstream media or anything like that.
Yeah, people are quite shy of addressing it, aren't they?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's like, I keep saying it's in the closet, because every time, you know, people have been asking me, what's your book about? And they expect me to just talk about the celebrity stuff. And when I say, well, it also addresses, you know, the severe anxiety disorder that I had that actually had me hospitalized a few times.
Oh, wow.
And still, you know, so many people have said to me, oh, my God, I have anxiety, or, oh, my God, I take, you know, some sort of medication, or I've had panic attacks. And so many times these are people that I've known for years. And I'm thinking to myself, why haven't we talked about this? And it's because people just kind of, you know, it's embarrassing and, you know, it's the last thing that you'd ever want to happen, especially when you're out at a social event or maybe in front of your coworkers or something. Yeah.
And, I mean, was that, do you feel looking back that it actually, because the whole sort of Hollywood world and fame and the pressure of that, do you think that being in that environment, do you think it actually made your anxiety worse because you had a lot of pressure to do your job and speak to these high profile people?
No, actually, that's the funny thing. People keep asking me that, and it's actually quite the opposite. The doing interviews, talking to people, that kind of exchange has always come quite naturally to me. So it was actually kind of therapeutic for me and took my mind off of the anxiety issues that I was having, believe it or not.
Okay, that's an interesting thing. It's a bit like you can put on, it's like a professional booster and you can just get on with it for a job. I can understand that. It's like the show must go on kind
Absolutely.
Of thing, and it helps you auto-focus into doing it.
Yeah, the show must go on. In fact, I talk about it in the book. You know, there was one particular instance where I was actually just about to interview Meghan McCain, who's the daughter of John McCain. He ran for president over here back in 2008. And I was actually in the throes of having some pretty major anxiety before I got onto the phone with her. But once I got on the phone with her, I was focused on the task at hand and doing the best possible interview. And it was almost like, it was like a 30 or whatever it was, 30 or 40 minutes. It was like a break, like a vacation from what I was going through, to be honest with you.
Do you think that, because the interviews were kind of like a therapy for you, that it helped you to be more proactive, I guess, or just like more in, what's the word I'm looking for?
That it made you want to pursue them.
Made you
want to
work more hard. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
That's a tough one. I think it was more of a parallel experience, because I've always been the kind of person who feels, you know, if I want to do something, I can do it. You know, if I get an impulse, like I said to myself, I want to write a book and I want to put out a book. Well, I'm going to write a book and put out a book. If I say I want to interview, you know, lots of famous people and write their stories, then I'm going to go do that. I don't have that same thing that a lot of people have, where they think, well, I could never do that, or I'm not qualified to do that. So it was just really more ambition, to be honest with you.
No, that's good. Go get it. Go get it, girl.
Get yours.
Yeah, exactly.
So the name of the book, for anyone just sort of listening in now, we're talking about Alison's new book, and it's Journaling Fame, a memoir of a life unhinged and on the record. I really like that title, because it kind of
thank you.
It sums up exactly what it is. It's like your life being a little bit on the unhinged side with your personal issues, and then on the record with all the celebrities. What a crazy mix. I mean, almost there could be some like movie moments in here.
Oh yeah,
a little bit. Or like
I hope so. I mean,
a movie
yeah,
would
I'm
be
thinking
dope,
like
Mila
Kunis. I want Mila Kunis to
play
me in the movie.
Mila Kunis. Oh, I love Mila Kunis.
Yeah, I can, or even a series maybe, because there's so many, because you interview over like what 200 people, famous figures.
Yeah.
And do you have any sort of favorite? I mean, looking back, can you pick any kind of favorite interviews or favorite people that you met them on and you were just like you clicked with that certain celebrity?
Yeah, I would say you guys know Kristen Chenoweth.
Kristen.
She may not be famous over there. She's a very famous singer and actress in the States.
Okay.
I've met her quite a bit. And Jenna Jameson, who I believe was on. Was she on Celebrity Big Brother over there?
Yeah,
Jenna Jameson. She rings a bell.
Does she ring a bell?
Yeah, she does.
Do you know who she is?
Maybe from my childhood. I don't know. Maybe she's an actress or a singer.
From
I don't know.
Dude.
No, I'm talking like 13. Somewhere around puberty. I don't know. I don't know why. Anyway, carry on.
Oh, my God. I clicked with them. I clicked very much, actually, with 50 Cent.
Really?
Rapper.
Okay.
Yeah, I really, really did. I spent about almost 2 hours with him, and it was a face-to-face interview. And actually, my little brother was there. It's the stories in the book, but he kind of tagged along with us. And we had a little bit of a fun back and forth, you know, male versus female thing going on, and I was outnumbered, of course. But, yeah, I clicked with him. Really sweet, down-to-earth, funny kind of guy. Courtney and Khloe Kardashian I liked quite a bit. Courtney I clicked with. You know, she was just a really chill, cool, down-to-earth girl. There are a lot of people. Russell Simmons I admired so much because of his spirituality. Deepak Chopra taught me a lot about actually how the brain works versus how the soul works, which really helped me quite a bit with my own issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was like, I swear, it was like getting a master's and a PhD, having one-on-one time with all of these people and picking their brains. It was such a privilege. I can't express it enough.
It's amazing. So if people want to get your book, you said it's coming out on Tuesday?
Coming out this Tuesday, April 25th, and over where you guys are, it's amazon.co.uk, Journaling Fame.
Oh, on Amazon. Okay, guys, so if you want to check out this book, which is like a mixture of amazing, amazing celebrity stories and also your own personal, very personal, close to your home story about your anxiety and how you overcame that. And do you feel like you've overcome that, or is it one of those things where you've now just like, you've learned to manage it?
I've learned to manage it. I would compare it to like somebody with an eating disorder, somebody with, you know, it's the kind of thing, or like alcoholism. You don't get cured from it, but you learn how to manage it and mm-hmm. you stay in recovery, and if you slip, you revert back to your tools, like therapy and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, fantastic. Thank you for taking time.
Thank you very much.
Amazing Florida to speak with us today. Thank you so much, Allison. All the best of luck for
the
book.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Good luck with the film as well. I hope Mila Kunis plays you.
Yeah. Let's contact Mila Kunis and let's get that done.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Allison.
Right.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Oh, amazing. Okie dokie, back with a little bit of Muse Kit.
What you got for us now then?
Well, Fast and Furious coming out. Well, it's come out now, so that's probably one of the only like really good things. I heard people on the bus be like, what do you want to go to cinema? What, Furious 8? All right. That's what I hear a lot. So this is one of the songs from the new album from the Fate and the Furious. It's Gang Up by Young Thug, 2 Chainz, Wiz Khalifa. It's back row and chill.
I'm with the gang, 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 and we bout to go up. Switching lanes, it's a thing every time we show up. You a lame, 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 and you so below us. Bet your hoe she know us, cause you know we glowed up. We stay down, and came up, and came up. We stay down, and came up, and gang up.
Yeah. I'm a villain that's winning. Precision, I'm killing. Represent the religion. Ended up independent. Took my car to the clinic. Let them check all the vitals. Middle finger to rival. Michael Jackson, my idol. Still ducking the pieholes. Talk to the plug every day. It's up Cinco de Mayo. I still got me a Carlo. Still got Monte Carlo. Your car running so bad. It stink up the Apollo. Call my Rolly a Rollo. Call my AP a Al Al. I ain't talking seat belts when I say that I'm strapped. I'm in love with my side hoe. I'll sneak it through the side door. I'ma show you what we ride for. I'ma show you what we die for.
Gang, 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 and we bout to go up. Twisting lanes, it's a thing every time we show up. You a lame, 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 and you so below us. Bet your hoe she know us, cause you know we glow up. Now we got stains on us. And all we gotta do is stay down and come up while they flexing. Yeah, I got a Hindi and she Western. Yeah, I just had sex with one of your best friends. Then that Fast and Furious started nesting. Yeah, I'm about to go take over, yeah. Did you stand? Is you rolling like a stroller? Yes, you are. You ready to take over like a 1980 Coke? Yes, yo. He know that Instagram shit or you gon' post that.
I'm with the gang, 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 and we about to go up. Kissing lanes, it's a thing every time we show up. You a lame, 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 and you so below us. Bitch, I hope she know us, cause you know we glow up.
Gang, we always ready to ride, cause for the squad we'll do anything. Stay down, we'll never change. We always gon' stay the same. Put you in check when you out of place. I try to tell them not to mess with my gang, gang, gang. We do what we gotta do and don't complain, blame, blame. I'm on a road, I'm probably fresh up off the plane, plane, plane. Know you worried about me, I do my thing, thing, thing. I got the world on my back. I put your girl on her back. I did it all on my own. Now there ain't no turning back. And my whole squad on my back. And shorty so bad I asked her if she rep the gang. She said facts. Gang, gang, gang,
gang, gang, gang, and we bout to go up. Twisting lanes, it's a thing every time we show up. You a lame, 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 and you so below us. Bet your hoe she know us, cause you know we glowed up. Stay down.
Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
So I wasn't paying attention, was I?
I tried to save you, though. I did, but you were quick. You were quick.
I was so involved in that song. That was great. That was from the Furious 8. Right, it's back on Chill with Johanna James and Ozzy this week.
Ozzy Achille.
Ozzy
yes.
Achille.
That's me.
Not Izaki. Ozzy Achille.
Zaki's a different dude. It's not
Ozzy.
I.
It's all right. No one can ever say my name right ever. They're like, Johanna.
What's your name?
Johanna.
That's what I said.
You know. Exactly. That's what I said. Right, moving on from the biggest technical cock-up I've done in my professional career. We've got our second competition to kickstart now. So if you want to win a signed copy of Alison's book, Alison, we were just speaking to you before the break, you can win a copy of A Journaling Fame, a memoir of A Life Unhinged and On the Record. So if you want to win her book, signed by Alison herself, then just pop onto our Twitter, it's at FUBAR Radio, and retweet the image and we'll announce the winner next Friday.
Whoop, whoop.
We've got winners coming out of everywhere next week. It's like, winner here, winner there. Stay tuned and tweet us. Right, we're joined by our next guest in the studio. Huge welcome, George Evans.
Welcome, sir.
Welcome, come in.
Having me. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you very much. And just let the kids at home know who you are, what you're about.
Okay, my name is George Evans. I am a co-director of a show that's opening very shortly, in a week and a half's time, I think. Called The Gap in the Light. And it is on at the New Diorama Theatre, which is near Warren Street.
Nice.
What's that about? Because A Gap in the Light, that sounds... I'm thinking, what's it about?
Well, so the story, the show basically follows, it follows two people going on an expedition into a very, very deep cave.
I'm claustrophobic, so that made my stomach go, whoa.
Exactly, that's kind of the point of the show, partly. But so they go on this expedition into this cave, and they encounter something when they're right at the bottom of it, in the deep blackness of it all. And it's the story of the thing they encounter coming back to the surface with them, in a way.
Is this like a horror play?
Yeah.
Fuck yes!
Wow.
Yes! That's the shit we need more of, man.
Kind of the vibe. Exactly, that's what we thought. We thought there's very, very little.
The only one I can think of is Woman in Black,
and then there's nothing else I can think of.
But Woman in Black is sick. Like, it is a very, very good play. It's like a formula. It follows a thing. But there's a lot to be said for it. It's great.
Yeah. I mean,
but we're trying to sort of go down a very different route with this thing. And try and do something that hasn't really been done before on stage.
I love horror films, so this is going to be... Oh, fuck, yes, mate.
Oh,
yes. I'm so excited about this, man. You have no idea how much I love horror-themed stuff.
Wow, yeah, you'll like it. I mean, it started as... No, that's the story, but that story emerged about 6 months ago or so. It's been in development for about a year and a half.
Okay.
We decided we want to make a show about fear, about what it is to be afraid, because obviously... Fear is a thing that we all connect with and tune in with.
Yeah.
And it exists, like you've been saying, in horror films, it's there.
Yeah.
But also it governs like what we do every day. Like me being nervous before I come on the radio, there's fear.
It's
there.
Fear,
or like
there's
how we were talking about anxiety just before.
We were talking to a lady just before. It's all rooted, one view of looking at it, is it's all rooted in fear. And so we were interested in exploring this quite common thing that we explore, that we all feel together. I suppose objectively as well, if you look at the world, I mean, we hear about this all the time. But I grew up, was born in the 90s, was sort of told that everything is safe and secure and feeling like my future's going to be bright and golden. But now suddenly we're all feeling what I'm certainly feeling.
Yeah. Our generation is like, we were set up to just succeed, and then it's like, guys are screwed.
Sorry, actually, no, you're not you're not going to get this future. So we just think it's an important time to make this show.
That was good. No,
this
I like
is,
that.
So just talking about Woman in Black, because I remember I went and I was so skeptical, and I went up there going, a theatre show, scaring me. Come on.
Pull the other one.
In the middle of the show, I jumped so much. I grabbed the man next to me, who I didn't even know. And I like pretty much jumped on his lap. I was so scared.
Wow.
So yeah, I was told by that show. And there was another show, I'm just thinking back. There was a show, I think it was called Ghost Stories.
There was.
Which was on the West End, terrified me as well.
Yeah, so that was the one that was really sort of gory and jumpy and quite like in your face.
It was clever. It was this professor who came on who was talking about the paranormal, and it was like he started off doing a sort of a lecture hall basically, and he was saying paranormal is not real. This is the reasons why, you know, it's all your brain jumps to these stupid conclusions and blah 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 blah. And then he talked about case studies, and he went into these particular stories which then became live on stage. And one was a guy who worked in as a security guard for a warehouse. His daughter was on a life support machine, so he worked nights. And he was going round, and you went with him round the thing, and then he went into this room full of mannequins, and then suddenly in the theatre you heard this, "Daddy," and then like everyone in the theatre is like, "Jacob!" And like, oh my god. And then there was another bit that I just remember about the play that freaked me out, was this young boy who didn't have a driver's license, but he took his mum's car to get to a party, and he was driving it back. The car broke down in the middle of the woods, mm-hmm. and what was scary about it was he did everything that you would do if you and so he like, he called the, first he had to call his mum, say, "Sorry, I've taken the car, what do I do?" And he had to call the breakdown people. They were like, "We'll be with you in an hour and 14 minutes. And he's in this car, and there is something in the woods, and it's...
What do you do?
It escalates. Yeah.
I could run, but I'd probably die.
Do you stay in the car? Do you ring? And then, oh. So watching something like a horror film, what horror film... watching something live actually is 10 times more scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're in the room with them.
It is, exactly.
In the room with the thing.
But that, but it's exactly the same thing. You're still using your imagination the same as you would when you're watching a film, but it's that your imagination makes it real for you in the space where you are. I mean, one thing we're really interested in doing is creating total blackout in the show. And that's something, as in totally, totally dark. And in life, generally, there are very, very few times. In fact, it's actually usually only possible deep underground or in an artificially created environment.
Yeah.
Like, even if you close your eyes, there's still light coming in in a way.
Yeah.
And so let's all do that. Yeah. So we worked with the venue where the show is on for a long time to create absolute blackout. So a lot of the show will happen in blackness. Complete blackness. And that it sounds kind of scary, but also what that does to your other senses and to your
heightens them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that's the idea, that you have like an acute awareness.
Legit goose pimples right now. Okay. Oh my god. But like, legally, can you blackout a theatre? Don't you have to have like the fire exit light?
I mean, this has been the major challenge that we've come up against.
Wait, is that a serious thing?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, I thought you have to have the fire exits.
There are ways around it, basically, and it's about having really, really carefully thought out structures in place. I mean, like, quite genuinely, we are exploring having night vision goggles so that the ushers in the theatre can see people if they're in trouble or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, that's
that,
a good idea.
That
yeah.
actually might have had yeah. to be a
that's,
I think,
that's a serious question.
Luckily,
though, for real,
we don't have to go down that route because it would be incredibly expensive. But but we're fine. We've got other things in place that ensure that it is a safe environment, absolutely, because that's sort of the most important thing.
Oh my god.
Like low key lights that still black out a room, but you can see all.
No, because they want total blackout.
So how do you get around that?
It's basically having people in place.
Okay.
In the room and having the audience aware before they come into the space that they're going to be.
They're signing up to be completely blinded.
You're going to be killed, guys. So just
it's not
sign here.
Enjoy. It's not the whole show is not like that. Like it's carefully chosen moments.
Okay.
But there's a restaurant in London.
Yeah, where you eat
in the dark.
Blind waiters as well.
Yeah,
right?
You eat in the pitch black dark because they want to apparently it tastes like 10 times better, and the conversations you have with people, because you can't judge anyone you can judge their voice, but like there are people you have a conversation with someone next to you all night and then you don't know what they look like.
That's pretty cool. Is that like speed dating?
Not like dating, but it's more like
I'm so dirty. I just go straight to this dating stuff. Like,
yeah,
it's
so
bad,
can we date in the dark? What can you
talk about food, Ozzy? Get away from the food porn. Let's come on.
Can we date the food in the dark? What else can we do with the food in the dark? This sounds really cool. So you are. So it's about to come out in the new Diorama Theatre. Where is that? That's ringing a bells.
Yeah, it's right by Warren Street Station.
Okay.
It's actually right between Warren Street and Great Portland Street stations, and it's sort of equidistant between the two. Like 2 minute walk from there.
How long's the run for?
It's a month, so it's opening on the 2nd of May and runs until the 27th.
Okay.
So this is cool.
So to catch
psychological
it.
Horror production. Wow.
The gap in the light. Yes.
That is so cool.
I am about that life. Well, so yeah.
When you said the gap in the light, immediately my first thing was, I was like, that's a Doctor Who title. There's the gap in the light in the time space continuum. Maybe it won't go down that line, but
come and find out. Maybe.
Do you find the Doctor in the depths of the?
Oh yeah, that's the secret.
That's
part
the thing
of the
that's
show
following.
I can't tell you, but Doctor Who is in the show.
Spoiler alert!
He's really not in the show.
They're the Dalek. Can you imagine? This is so cool. So, is this the first show that you have directed, produced, or is this?
Well, no. This is the third show that my company have produced. We're called Engineer Theatre Collective, and we've been going for
5 years or so now. And we've sort of been growing and growing. We've gone through a process of creating shows all together, like as a collective, which has been fairly good things about it, but also quite tricky because obviously it's a lot of like shared decision making.
Yeah, everyone has to, you have to say yes. That's a great idea, Barbie.
Also, no, that's crap. No, stop. Yeah. So it's quite slow. Like it's great, but it's slow. So we're fine tuning things down now. There's five of us in the company, but this is being co-directed by me and another director.
This is getting me excited. This is cool.
I'm definitely coming to see this, man.
And it's cool because so many, I think people have a bit of a prejudice about theatre. A little bit like, oh, it's not really for me.
Absolutely. Like, also, saying all this stuff, you know, talking about where fear comes from, all that, it sounds kind of highbrow. It sounds kind of, you know, these big, heavy ideas. The main point of this show is that we want it to be entertaining.
Yeah.
It to be a really good experience. Exactly like what you were talking about when you went to see Ghost Stories in the West End, you know, or Woman in Black. It's a memorable experience, but just done in a very different way. Yeah. And a groundbreaking way. Hopefully.
Sounds like it, though. It does.
Remember deodorant, guys. Don't be in, like, a blacked out room. No air.
Yeah.
Somebody kept farting. Really? Wasn't me. No.
I fart when I'm nervous.
I didn't shit myself. What are you talking about? No.
I think we'll know if the show's been a success if people have got that.
That feeling.
So how many casts have you got? Is it quite small?
It's three. Yeah, so it's small. It's small.
Well, that's the same as Woman in Black.
Yeah, it is. There you go.
What else? What else will do? This is really, really exciting. So, obviously, you're about to kickstart this, so you're not really forward thinking, but have you got... What's next? I always like what's to ask next? People, what's next?
Well, there's a few other shows in the pipeline for the company. There's a load of ideas being bounced around. I know, personally, I kind of find it hard to think past...
Yeah, of course.
This week and a half.
A week and a half's time because we're sort of all pulling all-nighters and not sleeping and just everything to get the show ready. Yeah. But it will be there.
When's your press day?
Press night is the 4th of May.
Nice.
So that's the Thursday.
May the 4th be with you.
Thank you very much.
Nice.
Great. Oh, well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you're just listening in now, we are talking about The Gap in the Light, the new psychological horror play.
It's going to be... It just feels like it's going to be epic. I'm not going to... I really want to see this.
We're going to guesstimate. New Diorama Theatre in London. Book your tickets now. Thank you so much for coming, George.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's have a little look. I'm going to go for...
What's it going to be?
The last one from Power Rangers. So I walk the line.
Halsey, oh, I love Halsey.
So we're going to do that. We're going to come back. We're going to be speaking to Lucy Patterson, film review, and we're going to be talking about what's hot and what is not.
Dope.
Keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine.
I'm a fool for you.
home. It's just gone 5:30. Back row and chill.
Back row and chill. Chill.
Chill. I like this. I like you've got such a radio voice, mate. It's brilliant.
Two hosts, one movie reviewer, and what critics are calling back row and chill.
It's so good. Chill. It's great.
On FubarRadio.com.
Welcome, Lucy Patterson.
Hello.
Now it's film review time. We're going to open it out as well. So if you guys are listening at home, if you want to review something, like, get involved, yeah. People. Email in chill@FubarRadio.com or tweet us at FubarRadio and we will shout you out.
Yeah.
What have you been seeing? Liking, loving, hating? What do you want to see? Like, let's open the conversation, yeah. People.
Let's talk.
Nice.
Let's talk about your problems. Wait, what have people seen? And what, what's going on?
What was the last film you saw?
The last film I saw was The Belko Experiment.
Huh.
It's been a bit of a shitty week this week with cinema releases,
hasn't it, in my opinion.
It's just been absolutely fucking dire. So I thought, okay, let's pick out the horror. Let's go and see that. And I was pleasantly surprised, I must admit.
What's the Belko Experiment?
It's basically, it's this office building in Colombia, and they've got about 80 expats working for them. They're all American, and they go in for the day, and all the locals are being sent home, and they're thinking, oh, what's this? And there's armed guards outside that, you know, everything's looking a bit shady. Yeah. And all of a sudden the building just shuts down, all the shutters come down on the windows and everything, and over the tannoy somebody says, okay, you need to comply with these rules to stay alive. You have to kill 6 people within the next 30 minutes, otherwise 30 of you will die.
Similar to like The Circle, have you seen that?
No, I haven't actually.
It's a similar thing where it's like it's all set in one tiny little location and that nothing is going to happen until it's like really like,
I love stuff like that.
The questions like ethics, like human ethics and all that kind of stuff.
That's exactly what this does. When you go deeper down and look past the
why they pick who to die
gore,
and stuff,
you know, and it's the thing is with it, I think it must have just been a passion project because it's written by James Gunn, the director of
Guardians
of the Galaxy, you know, and he's obviously, you know, hit the major big time. Mm-hmm. So he thought, okay, I'm just going to do this little project on the side. And it's got some old 90s faces in it.
Nice.
And Michael Rooker as well, obviously, because, you know, they're mates.
Of course.
I must admit, the gore in it, I enjoyed that.
Was it like saw gore?
It was...
I can't stand gore.
It was, and I mean, it was next level at some point, you know, sledgehammer to the head, and but not once, like twice. You see it proper mashed up on the floor. It's just, I love stuff like that. And the effects were really, really good. I mean, it's an oddball film.
Mm.
It reminded me of the way American Psycho tried to mix the humour with the god-awful psychological trauma of that film and the violence and the gore and the blood and guts and things, you know. And obviously it didn't work as well as American Psycho because nothing does.
Mm.
But for horror fans and real movie fans, go and see it at the cinema. Go and watch it and, you know, put yourself in their position. What would you do? You know, would you
that's
be
what I think,
one of the ones that sacrifices yourself, or would you be out to murder everyone and just like, you know, I'll be the last one to survive?
I love
those
kind of films.
Yeah,
man.
There's some twists and turns in it, and there was a real, real horrific execution scene, like proper IRA style bullet in the back of the head shit. And I was actually horrified, and I have seen the sickest shit there is on film, you know. And I was going, oh no, this is uncomfortable.
What is this feeling?
From a film? You know. No.
So it's called
The Belko Experiment.
And it's set in Colombia.
Uh-huh.
See, I had a problem as a child because I got very confused between Colombia and Cumbria.
So literally worlds apart.
I know, right? Because I remember seeing signs for Cumbria. I mean, oh, that's where it is. I had no idea it was north of Yorkshire. So when you said that, something just reminded me that such a twat when
so
I was a kid.
Silly.
Belko Experiment.
Yes, go and see it.
So that's a yeah.
Not if you're easily disturbed, though.
Love those, love
that
those.
That film gets a...
Yep.
It certainly does.
Love that, that's dope.
Yep. What do I see? What am I doing? Okay, so I watched, and I haven't watched it. I used to watch Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
And the last couple of years, I've not bothered. But then someone said, oh, you really should check out the latest episode because there's a new...
Really?
Yeah, there's a new... The new assistant, Pearl.
Yes.
And she's amazing, and like, you should really just give it a go because I thought, you know, well, I'm going to watch some Doctor Who. So I did, and I watched it on catch up, and she is brilliant. And they've gone right back to because I used to watch it in the good old days with Rose and when Noel was in it.
With Noel, obviously.
Bit weird. But, so they've gone back and she's so relatable and she carries the comedy and she kind of carries the series.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, she's nice. She's really, really good. And the story is really, really interesting as well. It's about this girl who, there's a puddle that when you look in the reflection of the puddle, you look weird and no one can work out why. They're like, it's me, but it's not me. Yeah. And then the doctor works out it's because it's not a reflection of your face. It's only half your face reflected back. So you're
spooky.
Because you're completely symmetrical in the thing, which in real life, obviously, you've got one eye that's up there, one eye down there. One eyebrow that's different or whatever. Actually, this week, weird time, I've been with my boyfriend for nearly a year, and he looked at my face and was like, your eyebrows are different. Have you not looked at my face before?
No shit, mate.
Who have you been looking at?
Yeah.
I've only just noticed. Pay attention. The other. I'm like, right.
Also, worst thing to point out on a girl's face.
Her eyebrows.
Don't mention the eyebrows, bro.
Well, even if it's good things, just don't say anything at all.
No one's got
symmetrical eyebrows.
Oh my
God, your eyebrows are so beautiful. Oh my God.
Actually, maybe that would probably go down quite well.
Yes. Lads, you heard it here first. Go for the eyebrows.
Compliment the eyebrows.
Compliment the eyebrows.
It's become a thing.
It is a thing. Badly.
Yeah, you don't say like, oh, I love this, I love your eyes. Yeah. Say, I love your eyebrows.
Yeah.
We spend so much time like arranging them and gelling them and moulding them.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So that was weird. Okay, we've tangented, but back totally. On. Doctor Who was brilliant, and it was kind of scary enough. And I wouldn't say it was horror because obviously it's like BBC primetime. Yeah. But there is this scary. The girl sort of dies in it, and she keeps coming back, and she's dripping wet, and she just keeps popping up.
I've never watched a Doctor Who episode in my life.
I
love sci-fi, which is really weird.
I've only watched a couple with Nolan because it's Noel.
Yeah.
I thought they'd do some research.
There are a couple of episodes. So if you're ever going to watch Doctor Who, there will even have episodes which are standalone, so you don't have to watch the rest of
it. Like the Christmas specials or even different ones?
But there's one, Christmas specials are quite good, but there's one called Don't Blink. Which you should definitely. If you're,
I feel like I've heard of that.
So basically, that's a standalone one. It's about a girl who, in cemeteries with tombstones that are angels.
Oh, is this the statue-y one? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
I've
basically,
heard about that.
As long as you're looking at them, they're made of stone. The minute you look away, God. They can move.
That sounds like an old playground game.
Yeah, it does.
So then you're walking through the thing, and then you turn and look back, and it's gone from there, and it's moved, and like it's moving and moving and moving, and if they touch you, they kill you.
That sounds really cool. Something I should watch.
But like you turn once, that. And it's just about to like.
Yeah, for sure. They turn around.
Oh my God!
That's so spooky.
And like practical effects wise, it's really easy because they just have like loads of statues. And they just keep moving them. And it's up to the actor to sell the. But you're like.
That was brilliant.
You know? Always on the
show. Made me jump a little bit.
BBC, my number is. I'd go for Don't Blink if you're going to get into Doctor Who.
Lovely.
Or just, start on this like last season and just go in there and it's really good, really relatable. A huge thumbs up from me.
Excellent.
I've got two actually. The first one was one that I found because I completed Netflix. When you complete Netflix, it opens up a whole new category of films for you. Just letting you know.
I want to do that.
But there's this thing on Hulu called Dimension 404, which is basically the Americans trying to recreate Black Mirror. Like, we know that Black Mirror got taken over by Netflix, which is cool.
For sure,
but they've completely so Black Mirror is more about techie kind of stories around futuristic tech and stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas Dimension 404 just takes it straight sci-fi. So every episode is a standalone little short film.
Nice.
Or whatever.
Oh, I like it.
And they deal with like time travel and like retro computer games coming to life and killing you.
Right.
All this kind of stuff. Like, it's cool.
Some serious shit.
I'd give that a yep. Do the yep thing.
Which is, what?
Yep. Yeah, that was sick. Oh, that was mine.
I very nearly pressed the wrong button, which would have been this one.
Thank you for not doing that. And the last one is one of my favorite shows just came back, which is called The Leftovers, which is about
is that the one with Justin Theroux in it?
I think so.
Liv Tyler.
Yes. That's the one. Yeah. And it's all about it's not the Holocaust. It's not the apocalypse.
They had some sort of apocalypse thing, didn't they?
Yeah. Basically, everyone disappeared,
and
they thought that they ascended into heaven.
Oh,
yeah, the rapture.
That's it. Yeah.
The show is
apocalypse.
Same thing.
This is the end. Apocalypse rapture. Come on. The world's ending. We know what's going on, do we?
You said apocalypse, and I was like, apartheid? I don't know. No, definitely wrong.
The rapture. But it never actually says it's the rapture. And just the way that this show is.
is shot is just cinematically beautiful. They're not doing the generic kind of show stuff, and each episode is like follows a different character in a different kind of way.
Oh, I get it now. The leftovers. I'm thinking like Bubble and Squeak. No,
no, no, no. Actual people.
This is all about the people who didn't like.
They should have called them the Left
basically.
Behind.
That is a much better title.
Then you wouldn't get confused with
exactly.
Food.
The Left Behind.
The Left Behind.
Yeah, but that's a really, really good, really good series.
I must admit, I've looked at it and I think I watched about 5 minutes at the beginning and probably got distracted by something.
But it's a slow burner as well. That's a thing.
Really?
Yeah,
that might have been
one of those ones.
I probably just went, don't watch this anymore.
That
don't take a lot.
Not on Netflix, right?
No, that's no. I just watched that online.
It has been on Sky,
HBO.
Though.
Yeah. No, it has, yeah. Actually,
and I think
yeah.
it might be on the box
Sky
set
Atlantic.
As well, everybody.
Okie dokie. Yeah. Find it. Let us know. So if you're listening out there and you want to like join in the conversation, I'm just going to like, if people are joining in, we're just doing film reviews right now. So let us know what you've seen, what you think is good, what you think is really crap. Because if you go and see something, it's totally rubbish. Like, help other people save like a tenner.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Or 50 quid or however much it costs to go to the bloody cinema nowadays.
About a grand.
So what are you liking? Tweet us at FUBAR Radio or email in chill@fubarradio.com. We're just going to pop to some more music right now. Because
what you got for me?
I love it. I'm going to go for a bit of Solomon Burke because I love a song. And this is the song. This is the song in Dirty Dancing.
Oh.
When they have sex for the first time.
Oh, I love this song.
This is my Netflix and chill song if I'm going to do this.
Yes.
This
is, good one. Good
I mean,
choice.
This is pretty good. So this is Solomon Burke on Back Row and Chill.
Leaves you all alone, and nobody calls you on the phone. Or don't you feel like a cry? Don't you feel like a cry? For here I am, honey. Come on, you cry to me. The smell of her perfume. Don't you feel like a cry? Don't you feel like crying? Don't you feel like a cry? Come on, come on, cry to me. Oh, nothing can be said. Walk with me. Oh, oh, yeah. When you're waiting for a voice to come in the night, but there's no one. Don't you feel like I'm crying?
I hope some babies were made in that 2 minutes.
Very quick. You're welcome.
25. I like that I come back in and you just cough.
I'm sorry.
Terrible timing.
Infecting the microphone.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
Amazing. So we were having a little chit chat while that was on about the series 13 Reasons Why, which everyone seems to be talking about on the internet for the good and the bad.
Yeah.
It's a Netflix series which has got, I think, Selena Gomez.
She produced it with her mom.
Yeah, she's not in it. And I'm quite surprised that, like, she produced something that I liked it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like any kind of like bubblegum.
No, not at all.
Maybe even her name attached to it might have hurt it a little bit.
That is true, actually. That is a thought that crossed my mind.
Yeah, but people might not take it as seriously, but the show's
deep.
Yeah, yeah. This is not Disney. Like, this is not Disney.
This ain't no Disney walk around. No, this is good.
It's because I was watching it, and my boyfriend, he sort of heard it and went, "Oh, what is this?" And I went, "Oh, actually, it's a TV program. It says this girl, she commits suicide, and she leaves these cassette tapes for people to understand the 13 reasons why she committed suicide." And he went, "Oh, that sounds good." So when you see what it is, that's what it's about, and it's about this girl who does exactly that. She commits suicide, and she's left these tapes and all the kids, and so you're like slowly unraveling, and you keep going back and forth between the present day and when she was alive. Mm-hmm. So the actual girl does get to be in the series a lot.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, like, how is she in series season two?
I know.
Because she's kind of already gone. Like, oh, I left these VHSs.
These are the other tapes.
The other tapes.
You missed them the first time, but they're here.
Side BB. What? So we'll just leave that to, like, the writers to get mad with. But I'm, like, five episodes in, and I think that it does kind of... It takes off, it slows down, and then apparently it just runs. So I'm waiting for, like, the post-episode six run.
Like, I'm looking
finished
forward
it, and it's amazing.
It. Yeah, same.
It's so good.
It didn't take me long to finish it at all.
No.
And then the second season, that's going to be really interesting, I think, really, if they go there.
There was a lot of... I'm not going to spoil anything,
but there was a lot of
things left unexplained, you know, that could spawn a whole season, which is fair. Yeah.
It's weird because it's got the title's 13 Reasons Why.
I know.
It should be self-explanatory. It shouldn't be, but, you know, maybe they... Oh, it's one of those things where it just answers the question with a question.
Yeah.
13 Reasons
Annoying.
Why. Why not?
What are the reasons people don't like it then online, do you think?
Well, people are saying that obviously the subject of suicide and teen suicide and bullying, and saying that it kind of glorifies it, and there's a couple of memes flying around kind of making a joke out of the fact of, you know, if something's too much, you just die and leave someone some tapes.
Wow. That's a bit harsh.
It's harsh. But I think that it's getting...
Then how do you talk about it?
It's getting a conversation.
How do you have these conversations if you don't say something?
Millions of people are watching this, and then they're going to talk about someone, and they're going to tweet about it, or they're going to look up the meme and watch the show, and then...
Maybe some bullies will stop fucking bullying people.
Yeah.
You know?
Like we were saying, it's a huge lesson to just be nice to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know what damage you're causing to someone with action that you're taking.
Yeah.
You know, it might not be anything to you, but it might cause serious damage to somebody else. You know, it's not glorified at all. I think it's absolutely amazing.
I thought it was very tastefully done as well.
Totally.
They could have, like, I mean, I can't even spoil it, but there's certain scenes where they could have taken a low road or just tried to play it safe, but they really wanted to, like, hammer home,
it's,
like,
a lot of
the graphic nature of some of that
watch,
stuff that she goes through.
Which is, I think, is good, because you shouldn't, especially these subjects, I don't think you should wish wash it.
No, absolutely not.
Because it isn't a wish wash.
You need to
subject.
Show how horrible some of
exactly.
that stuff
really
is.
So I'm loving 13 Reasons. I just need to find the time because it's so hard to get. I keep diving in it and then having to go out.
You want to know what my trick is?
What?
I don't sleep. I never sleep.
That'd be
We'd
one.
All get so much done if we didn't.
No, I'm one of those beings where, like, I need, like, over 8 hours. I have a meltdown. I have a toddler tantrum.
I'll have, like 2 hours and then just watch something else.
No.
No, I go to bed at 9 o'clock. I'm an absolute bastard if I don't get enough sleep.
Yeah,
I'm horrible.
I need sleep. I've just accepted it. I can't do all-nighters. I need sleep. And I'm very grumpy little princess if I don't get my sleep.
Fair.
So I'm going to do it.
It's fair.
Let her
fair.
Sleeping.
Right, so I saw... the previews of a movie called The Shack, which I can't go too deep into because it's not out yet. It's coming out.
Is this a horror?
No. Well, no. No. It was a very emotional film, and it touched a lot of buttons, and I cried a lot. So basically, it was a book. It was a book that went, like, worldwide bestseller. I heard about it years ago, and obviously now they made it into a movie. So it's about a guy who... he's a father of three, and he takes his kids on a camping trip in the mountains, like those American kind of camping places, without the mum. And he gets into this horrible situation where two of his kids go out in a canoe, and he's got this little tiny, gorgeous little 3-year-old or 4-year-old or whatever who's colouring by the tent. And then one of the kids falls out of the canoe and gets stuck under it.
Oh.
So he has this horrible dilemma. So obviously he jumps into and to save one kid. And once he saves that, everyone...
The toddler, someone has... Oh, wow.
A paedophile's grabbed a toddler.
Oh, my...
No!
What?
Yeah, so what happens is, obviously, he's, like, mortified because he had to save one kid and not the other.
How does that even, like...
Yeah, so she gets grabbed in a moment, and then they find her, and she's been taken to this shack, and that's where the body's found, and he has to go and, like, identify the body. So that's, like, the opening premise of the movie.
Fucking wow, world. That's just the opener.
That yeah. just
fucking
sounds
hell.
Horrendous already.
And the movie is about... It's not really about that. It's about dealing with grief and forgiveness, and it's about... So basically, I think it's going to cause a lot of people going yes or no, but the core of the movie is amazing. So he gets a letter in his grief. He gets a note that says, "I'm going to be at the shack this weekend. I miss you. Come meet me."
Oh.
And essentially, it's a letter. It's an invitation from God. He thinks it's going to be the murderer. So that's why he goes up to the shack to, like, have it out with this guy. And it turns out that God in three people, the Trinity, are hanging out in the shack for the weekend, and he spends the weekend with them, and they basically wrestle out grief and all of the big questions that people have in the world of, like, if God really cared about people, why would he let this little girl die? And it's very well done. And the three people that you've got in the shack, the main one, God, is played by the lady who was in The Help.
Huh.
I forgot the name of the actress.
Octavia Spencer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
She plays... The shack. They call her Papa.
Okay.
And it's just so good and so...
This sounds amazing.
This does sound... And yeah. It doesn't...
I wasn't expecting you to say any of that.
Exactly. It's
you started with, like, some kids in the woods, somebody get trapped under a canoe, and now she's talking to the Holy Trinity.
It's
going to
be some kind of, like, revenge story.
No, but then this,
I was thinking of something like Nocturnal Animals. Like, that sounds very similar to, like, a grief... That was a great film. Aaron Taylor-Johnson was amazing, but yes.
Should have got an Oscar. I will never let that go.
This is like how to deal with the aftermath of Nocturnal Animals, if that happened to you in real life.
Okay.
So this guy has got this huge vendetta. He's got a lot of hate, a lot of anger, a lot of, like, he's feeling responsible. He's got so many questions. And you also see his previous life of when he was a kid, and his dad beat him, was an alcoholic and used to beat him, and there was a lot of religious stuff that he really, like, went away from religion because of the bad experience he had. And basically meeting, there's some light comedy in it as well, but
I can imagine
meeting the Trinity.
Wow.
Which is by this gorgeous Asian woman, plays the sort of the Holy Spirit creative energy of the world. Then you've got this young, like, Middle Eastern guy who's Jesus,
cast Jesus, right? What the hell?
Yeah, and then you've got Papa, who's this sort of, like, friendly mama black lady who it's brilliant, and, like,
I really want to see this.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this.
She delivers some lines just so amazingly.
When's it out?
I think it's out next week.
Excellent.
Yeah, we're gonna.
That sounds dope.
I was crying my eyes out. It's just like, I mean, I've never, like, lost a kid or been in that situation, but anyone who's had sort of grief or pain or those real kind of questions, and it made you think, and it's changed the way that I've thought about other people. And you, like, were saying, what made me think about it was that you never know what's going on with someone else.
Yeah.
Or you never know the reasons why. To get to a certain... People just don't be born evil.
No.
There is a reason why
they got to that point.
This movie, if anything, you know, religious beliefs or not, it makes you think, okay, other people go through stuff and we just don't know.
Yeah.
We never know the other person's full story.
Yeah. Even what they tell you is not going to be the full story, because even as
you've
a person,
you don't know
some of the things that have affected you in a certain kind of way.
Sure,
you know?
Exactly. So I don't want to give up too many spoilers, but The Shack was a good movie.
Ooh, very
excited. Your tissues. It was not what I expected. I went in not knowing, I hadn't read the book, and I was just like, and it was the main guy in it is the guy from Avatar.
Sam Worthington. Was it Sam Worthington?
Yeah, it is Sam Worthington. Yeah.
Yeah. So the guy from Avatar, he plays the dad.
Oh, wow.
And he does
a
very, 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 very good job.
Yeah.
So,
I haven't seen him in a while.
No.
Yeah. Well, he was filming The Shack.
Obviously he's doing The Shack.
Hanging out with God.
He's hanging out with God, which was just brilliant. Right, we've come into close, so thank you so much, guys, for coming
in. Is that the end of the show?
The weekend has officially started.
Let's get this party started.
So let's go off, have whatever you're doing, and we'll see you guys next week. So I'm going to leave you with a song right now, which is Ed Sheeran.
Lovely.
Because I've seen this going around the internet. So obviously Ed Sheeran, Shape
of
You.
Does that say TLC as well?
It is. Ed Sheeran literally had to pay.
Oh yeah, I heard about this.
Had to pay royalties to TLC because the melody is exactly the same for Shape of You. So he paid them to use the melody. So someone's done an official mashup. Shape of Scrubs. This is Back Row and Chill. Have a good weekend.
made for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me. Come on now, follow my lead. I'm coming now, follow my lead.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't want no scrub. Scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging at the passenger side of his best friend try, trying to holler at me. I don't want no scrub. Scrub is a guy that can't get no love from me. Hanging at the passenger side of his best friend try, trying to holler at me.
I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body.
Trying to holler at me. He's checking me, but his game is kinda weak. And I know that he cannot approach me. Cause I'm looking like class and he's looking like trash. Can't get with a deadbeat ass. So, no, I don't want your number, no. I don't wanna give you mine, and no. I don't wanna meet you nowhere, no. Don't want none of your time.
Now you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me. I'm coming now, follow my lead. I'm coming now, follow my lead.
This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.